Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is two-time Mary Hickens Clark award-winning author, Carol Goodman. Goodman's new novel is The Stranger Behind You. Carol, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Jeff. It's great to be here.
Great.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, if someone hasn't yet heard about your new novel, The Stranger Behind You, how would you describe the novel?
Well, it's a suspenseful thriller, and it's also a novel of these times. It's set, it's about a reporter, Joan Lurie, who has just done an expose on a very important man who she's exposed as a sexual predator. And on the night that her story goes live, she is attacked on her way home as she enters her apartment. And in the wake of that, she seeks refuge at the safest place she can find, which turns out to be an apartment building called The Refuge in Northern Manhattan. So that's where it starts out.
That's great. Well, do you remember the original idea or impetus that led you to writing The Stranger Behind You?
I actually do. You know, you don't always know that origin story right. For every book, but for this book I think I do. There are a couple things that sort of came around the same time and added up to it. The first actually was, I mean, there was the Me Too movement that was, you know, going mm-hmm. on, that we were all hearing about, and, you know, Harvey Weinstein and I don't think Jeffrey Epstein had actually happened yet. But then I was listening to Dr. Christine Blasey Ford give her testimony about the sexual assault that she endured, and then the lifelong aftermath of that, what she called the sequelae of that attack. And the symptoms she described were claustrophobia, panic attacks, anxiety. And I found myself weeping, as I think a lot of women were really like moved and touched by her testimony and reflected on it, experiences they had had. But the person I really was weeping for was my mother, who I knew had a traumatic childhood, who I knew she had been sexually assaulted when she was 18. And I knew she had had all these symptoms. She had had anxiety and claustrophobia. She slept with the light on her entire life. But somehow I had never really put them together. I'd never realized that what she was suffering was really, you know, this sequelae of that attack. And that made me really want to write something about something that dealt with the Me Too movement, but that also really went back in history to, you know, situations women had to deal with many years ago. So
sure.
I think, yeah, that was what launched it.
Right. That's some powerful motivation. Well, mm-hmm. I'm curious, what was your initial writing journey that led you to writing and publishing your first novel?
Oh, okay. So that goes back a little bit. I'm out to talking about things that go back, because it'll be 20 years next year. It will be the 20th anniversary of my first book's publication. So it was a little over 20 years. Well, I was always a writer. And I mean, since I was nine, that's what I wanted to do. And while I did get a lot of encouragement to that, you know, I had no idea how to go about that. But I wrote poetry in my teens, really bad poetry. I wrote short stories in my 20s, didn't get anything published. Wrote two novels before I was in my 30s or in my early 30s that did not get published. And I did an MFA program. Finally, I started getting some stories published, and the third novel I wrote, The Lake of Dead Languages, that one got an agent, and that one, you know, got sold. So, you know, and that I was by that time in my mid 30s. So it was I always tell people that's either a happy story or a sad story, depending on how old you are.
What do you feel like you were learning along the way as you were writing those short stories and then those right. initial two novels?
Well, there were a number of one. I was learning just to keep going, and that you kind of just have to do it at some point because it's what you want to do. and sort of live with that, the discouragement that comes along with it, as well as, you know, some encouragement. But then in a craft sense, I think what made the difference in my third novel is when I went back to poetry and then back to short stories, I began to see how I could use the quality of language and imagery of poetry and the conciseness of short fiction in a longer work. And it was taking those skills and bringing them to the novel that I think made a difference, I think is what made that third novel different and a little bit more skillful. I mean, it's still such a, I feel like I'm always on a path to learning all the craft tricks, but or the craft skills, I should say. They're right. Not really tricks. But I do think I did feel, you know, I learned a few things in some writing classes and through, you know, people's reaction to what I wrote, and I began to be able to apply that to a longer work.
Well, how do you think your MFA experience impacted your novel writing and your success as a writer?
Well, first of all, I'll say that, you know, I don't think anyone needs to get an MFA to be a writer. You know, obviously, many, many people did without it. But for me, it came at a time in my life where taking those classes, it was a pledge of seriousness that, okay, this is really what I am. And this is what, you know, I am aiming for, and to be among other writers who really cared and were very serious about writing. So to be among them as peers made a big difference to me. And I think that I began to take myself, my writing more seriously. And, you know, and I continued learning. I had been taking writing classes before the MFA. The writing classes I took there were particularly good, both because of the quality of the teachers and the level of the students, that they were all, I'd say that was the biggest difference. They were all people who were committed to being writers. And getting feedback and response from both my teachers and those other writers made a big difference for me. It did it. And I think it made, I ended up writing Lake of Dead Languages in the year after I finished the MFA. And I did ask the agent who ultimately, you know, agreed to represent that book, whether it made a difference that I had an MFA. And she said, well, you know, it wasn't the only, you know, the main thing was that she liked the book that I submitted to her. But she said the MFA did give her that sense of, well, this is somebody who's been serious and working on her craft. So it was a little nudge in that direction.
Sure. So I'm curious, is your process the same from novel to novel in terms of as you begin the novel? Are you doing extensive outlines before, or do you kind of just have the germ of an idea and see where the narrative takes you?
Well, I was first going to say, no, it's never the same. I wish it were, because I could depend on it. But then when you said about the outlines, I will say that I don't do an outline. I do planning, and, you know, when I have an idea, I'll start jotting down notes and then doing some research and writing more notes, and it'll, you know, just sort of, I'll just keep writing notes, and eventually I'll have sort of a rough idea of what the book is that I want to write. Very often I will have sort of a picture of what the end, you know, where I'm heading towards. But I do not outline. And, you know, I've just, you know, they say that writers fall into the plotter and pantser camps. And I'm much more in the pantser, you know, going by the seat of my pants as I write camp. But, you know, that doesn't mean I'm not doing a lot of planning. I'm doing that in the form of, you know, writing notes all the time and trying to figure out like what the next couple chapters are going to look like and what this section is going to look like. And, you know, thinking about structure, I sometimes really wish that I just don't think I have the kind of brain that can plan in detail. And it makes it harder in some ways. But then when something does, you know, I kind of have to trust in the, you know, have faith that it will work out while I'm writing on the page. And it usually does. So.
And do you ever feel like you're on a high wire act as you're doing that?
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
It's nerve-wracking. It honestly is. Like, I mean, I sat down this morning to write, and I love writing. I really do. But I also have this little, every morning when I open up my notebook, I have a little sense of dread, which sounds terrible, but it's there. And it's like, I'm not sure how this scene's going to, you know, what's going to happen next. And I'll start writing and I'll be like, and then if I start seeing it, I'll get really excited. And that happened for me this morning. And there's just nothing like that. I'm just like high for the rest of the day. I'm like, this worked out, you know, this scene developed in a way that I was not able to foresee or plan. And then I'm just like, I think it's good. You know, it's like that little hopeful, you know, whereas on the other hand, some days I'll write I write by hand, and I write notes on the left-hand side of my notebook. Some will be like, you know, make better, you know.
So do you write the whole novel by hand?
No, well, I do write it by hand, but I type, usually I'll get into a rhythm of like writing either one or two chapters per week. And then on the weekend, I'll type them up.
Gotcha.
So I do know people who write the whole thing by hand and type it up. And that seems really daunting to me. But for me, the going between the handwriting and the typing is a form of, you know, in progress editing.
Right.
Because I'll write a chapter or two. And then when I type them up, I'm refining, I'm making it better, because if I cut the note in the left-hand margin that said make better, I'll be like, oh, okay, try to make that better now, and working things out. And then I'll reread those two chapters, usually starting Monday morning, and then go on to write the next. So it's kind of a way of like sort of in draft editing as I go along.
Well, given your success to date, what writing advice would you offer for those who are working on their own stories and novels?
Mm-hmm. First, you know, you need a lot of faith and really the ability, you know, just to keep to it, that, you know, don't be discouraged. If this is what you want to do, don't be discouraged by, not having it happen immediately. And then, you know, reading, you know, just reading as much as you can. That's I think where most of us start by learning how to write is by reading a lot, reading eclectically, read the kind of books you think you want to write. And, you know, and I think taking classes and finding a community of writers, finding people who can give you feedback, is really important. And that can be difficult. Sometimes you can find friends and family who are good at that. But friends and family aren't always the ones that are best at that. So, you know, by taking classes or, you know, joining writing groups, you can hopefully find a few people who, you know, give you good feedback. And by good feedback, I always say good feedback, I tell my students, is feedback you can do something with. If it stops you from writing, it wasn't good.
Right.
Ignore it.
Yes. Well, what novels or nonfiction books have you read recently that you enjoyed?
I've been reading. So I just read a really great book by a debut author called Shudder by Melissa Larson. And we just did a little talk together at a bookstore, and she's going to join me for my launch. And it's a suspense novel set on an island off the coast of Maine. which I happen to have met Melissa at a writer's retreat on an island off the coast of Maine. So so that was really fun to read. And it's great to read a debut author who has so much promise. I'm reading a book right now by Leah Conan called All the Broken People. Again, I'm gonna be joining her at an event at Oblong Books on July 6th, as well as Melissa. And that's set in Woodstock, and it's a great suspense novel. So I'm reading suspense novels. I'm also doing some kind of research reading because the next book I'm working on is set in the 1940s. So I've been reading some noir, you know, some Chandler and Laura, and watching a lot of 40s movies. So I've been kind of going back and forth between reading what's new, what's contemporary, and also some 40s noir detective fiction.
That's great. Well, where can people find you online if they'd like to learn more about you and your novels?
Well, you can go to my website, carolgoodman.com. You can go to my author Facebook page, Carol Goodman Author. I think if you do that, you'll find it. And those, I think, are the best places.
Great.
And from there, you could find the other places, I'm
yes,
sure.
Yes. Great. Well, again, we've been speaking with Mary Higgins Clark, award-winning author Carol Goodman. Carol's latest novel, The Stranger Behind You, is on sale now, so go buy a copy. And Carol, thanks for doing this interview.
Oh, such a pleasure. It was fun talking with you, Jeff. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Now, stay tuned for a brief excerpt from the audiobook of The Stranger Behind You by Carol Goodman, performed by Samantha Dez, available from Harper Audio, wherever audiobooks are sold.
It happened the night the story went live. My editor, Simon Wallace, had rented out the restaurant across the street from Manahatta's offices to celebrate. A lavish gesture even for Simon, who ran the magazine as if it were 1989. "You've worked on it for 3 years. It's a damned fine story. You deserve to celebrate before the wolves circle." He'd given the last phrase in his husky vibrato with a wink as we stood outside the door to the restaurant. He'd warned me 3 years ago that if I went forward with the story, I'd be letting myself in for a holy shitstorm. He delivered the warning during my interview for a job writing for the Style section of Manahatta. I'd already interviewed with a Style editor, Sylvia Crosley, but apparently the big boss had to personally meet all potential new hires. The first question Simon Wallace asked when he looked at my resume was, "Why'd you leave the Globe?" It's what I'd been afraid of. No one left an internship at the Globe voluntarily. It was the plum of journalism internships. I could have lied, made up a bullshit story about wanting to work at a different kind of publication. But instead, I told the truth. I saw Casper Osgood put his arm around his assistant, and then I saw her crying in the ladies' room. She told me she'd been sleeping with him for 6 months, and she was afraid that if she complained to HR, she'd be fired. She had a black eye that she'd tried to hide with makeup. The next day, she was gone, and I found out she had been fired. I went to HR to ask what had happened to her and to tell them that I was worried she'd been sexually harassed. Then I was fired. No reason given because, of course, they don't have to with an intern. Simon had been silent for a moment, and then said, "You sound angry." The truth was, I'd been fighting back tears, digging my nails so hard into my palms I had little crescent scars there for days after. I suppose so. Casper Osgood shouldn't be allowed to get away with treating women that way. No man should.
"It sounds like you're carrying a grudge," he had said.
"Maybe," I'd admitted, clenching my jaw to keep it from trembling. "But someone should expose him."
"Is that what you want to do? Expose Casper Osgood, the darling of the conservative elite? He donates to the most powerful Republican causes and politicians and uses the Globe to crusade for reform. He's well-connected and rich enough to pay for the best lawyers. A story like that would raise a holy shitstorm. It could break your career. Or make it." He'd said the last three words with a little upward lilt in his voice and a tug at the corner of his mouth. It felt like a lifeline being tossed to me just when I thought I was going under. "Yes," I'd responded, not realizing how much I wanted to expose Osgood until the word was out of my mouth. I'd spent the last 3 weeks weeping in my apartment, sure my career as a journalist was over before it had begun. "That's what I want to do. I'd like to write that story. But in the meantime, I'd really like this job writing for your style section so I can pay my rent and not have to move back in with my mother and grandmother upstate." That had made him laugh. "Why not both?" he'd asked. "How about we hire you to write style stories for Sylvia, and in the meantime, you see what you can dig up on Osgood. If you think you've got a story in 6 months, pitch it to me properly, and if I think it's got legs, I'll back you up. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with holding a grudge," he'd added, winking. "After paying the rent, it's the best motivator in the world."
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.